fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Hey, hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to Sell Porn or Die Trying. I'm your host, Connor Young. I am the CEO and co-owner of WhyNot.com. We are the original resource for the adult entertainment industry, the very first one. And this is our show. This is my show. And this is a show about the business side of the adult entertainment industry. We talk a lot about affiliate matters, things of importance to affiliates, how to make money as an affiliate, what you can do to get your share of the adult industry pie. This is also a great show for business owners, business executives, and investors. If you're an investor looking to maybe get in the business, buy a business, invest in a business, this is your show. You get to hear from some of the top people in the industry, their thoughts on how things are going, where we're at, where we're going in the future, the state of things, the health of the industry. That's what we're here to do. And this week, in that idea, I've got the perfect guy in that spirit to have a conversation about the industry because he knows it like nobody else. We're going to be talking with Brad Mitchell. He's the president and the owner, founder of Mojo Host. And this is a guy, though, who started off as an affiliate, as a webmaster, as somebody who was just building little websites and earning a chunk of the profits back in the day. And he used that experience over the years to turn it into his own hosting business and become really one of the most important people in the industry. Brad's service is just key and vital to a lot of companies who have chosen him and who rely on him. And he's been around for almost as long as me, about 2 years less than me. He got his start, I want to say it was 1999, if I remember correctly from our conversation. But long time ago, he's been around, and he has a tremendous amount of experience. And here's the thing about Brad. Don't tell him I said this, because I don't want it to go to his head. But everybody likes Brad, like everybody. And you know how hard that is to accomplish these days when everybody's in their little camps? I'm over here in this camp. I'm in that camp. There's political divides. People are bickering over everything. And Brad's one of those guys. He can pop into any group, and he shows up. It's like everybody, hey, it's Brad. Everybody's happy to see him. He takes good care of people everywhere he goes. If you're fortunate enough to be at an event with Brad and you're in the same room with him, he's probably buying you drinks. He's probably taking care of you. He's worked really hard on building those relationships and earning his reputation in the industry, and it's paid off. It's paid off. He's a winner of WhyNot Awards, many WhyNot Awards, and we're always thrilled when he takes to the stage to give a speech because it's always very heartfelt. You know he's saying some stuff that he means. It's easy to root for Brad, and I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. I really enjoyed talking with him. So one of the things I do want to say before we get to the interview is give some thought as you're listening to this on the importance, really, of backing companies like Mojo Host or others who are friendly to our industry and provide vital, important technical services. You'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't be surprised, depending on how long you've been in this business, how many mainstream services just don't want anything to do with us. You look in their terms of service, you look what they're all about, you want to use their service, you want to give them money, you're providing a legal service, a legal business yourself, and it's right there in black and white. If you're involved in anything that has, you know, sexually explicit content, we don't want anything to do with you. And so often, adult companies, affiliates, webmasters try to do business with these mainstream services anyway, and it always goes bad. Always goes bad eventually. They will kick you off their platforms. They will, you know, you often keep your money when they do so. Sometimes they will. Sometimes they'll refund you. Sometimes you lose your data. You're going to lose all your time that you invested in getting to know that service and implementing that service into your business routines. Mojo Host is an example of a company that provides a range of technical services that you don't have to worry about that. And that's huge. That's just huge. So it doesn't apply just to Mojo Host. It applies across the industry. There are services that provide technical or software benefits to the adult industry that are friendly with us, that we see them at shows, we see them doing business with us. Those are people that we want to support. So think about that as you're listening to Brad and me talk about the industry and the state of things. And looking ahead, I just wanted to give a quick heads up on some of the episodes so you can anticipate some of these shows we have coming up. We'll be talking with Max from Crack Revenue here on a future episode. So watch for that one. We're talking to Todd from Yanks Cash and also Jeff Wilson from Flirt for Free. All those episodes and more are coming up on Sell Porn or Die Trying. So keep an eye out for those. All great people, all important people that have interesting things to say about the industry. Can you believe, by the way, that we're coming up on 1 year on this whole COVID lockdown craziness? It's insane. And hopefully it's been a good year for you. It hasn't been for everybody. I think different parts of the industry have been impacted by all this in different ways. Some people have done really well. Others have really struggled during this crazy time. But I'll tell you, the thing that I miss the most about the way it used to be is we just don't get together as a group anymore, right? We haven't really done that for a year. And live events, to me, it's so important. The adult industry, we're kind of a family. Yeah, we got the crazy uncles that show up, you know, that we wish we'd go back, you know, and maybe not show up. We got a few of those wandering around at events, but we're basically a family, and we're very happy to see each other. And I just think of the shows, some of the shows that are gone, like the Phoenix Forum. And every year for over a decade, we would travel out to Phoenix and we'd all sit around in the beautiful weather at the Tempe Mission Palms Hotel and talk business. And the smiling faces I would see there, the people I was always so happy to see again, Vegas, over in Europe at Prague. These shows are so important to our psyche as an industry. And so keep an eye out for shows as they start to reemerge. I think later this year, there's a really good chance of some events happening. Look at in Prague, we're looking at the European Summit, which has a couple shows planned this year. Hopefully the triumphant in-person return of the Why Not Awards will happen in Prague in September. That is the goal. And given the state of vaccinations, and I think there's reasons to be optimistic, we're keeping our fingers crossed on that. Keep your ears open for another announcement from Why Not about an event perhaps later in the year. We don't want to jump the gun until we have a better idea of what's going on with travel restrictions and risks there and vaccinations. But hopefully we're going to be in shape to run that later in the year. And other events that might start happening later in 2021, these events are, look, they rely on momentum. They get a certain amount of momentum built up over the years, and it rolls from year to year. To have a disruption like this, it's difficult. And I think if you have the means and you're feeling later in this year that it's safe to travel, you're vaccinated, you feel like you can do that safely, and you see some events happening, get your ass on a plane and get out there or get in the car if it's close and drive out there and support that event. We need to get these rolling again because live events are just so key to all of us making friends and creating lasting relationships, sharing ideas. So I'm really looking forward to that in 2021. All right. Without any further ado, let's jump to this episode. This is me talking with Brad Mitchell, the president and owner of Mojo Host. I hope you enjoy it. Brad, thank you so much for joining us today. Really excited to have you on the show. I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me today.
Hi, Connor. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you again for having me.
No worries, man. We're thrilled to have you. And I just wanted to get started. Most people know who you are, of course. You're very visible, and you're well loved in the industry. But for those who don't really know you, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to start off and talk a little bit about yourself. How long have you been working in kind of, you know, within the adult industry, and talk a little about your business, Mojo Host, please?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Brad Mitchell. I am the president, owner, founder of Mojo Host. So as most people know me, it's with the Mojo Host brand. And I've been in the industry for now 20 years, but you know, the origins of my starter are actually not as a web host. I was a webmaster first and an affiliate and a pay site owner. So I actually started in late 1999 with my own websites. I was working at that time. I was very young. I was that like 20, 23. Yeah. So I was working for a family business that I had been working for since high school that was in healthcare. And I started when it was pre-revenue and then actually kept working there for just over 7 years, bringing me to this change in my life where I started, an internet company. But basically I'd always wanted to own my own business and sort of figured out that it wasn't going to be in my future to really ever get any equity that I thought I was promised for this company. So after the sort of blood, sweat, and tears, at least that's how I saw it back then, that I had given from the age of, 16 until that age in my 20s, I gave 6 months notice and started. I didn't really know what the hell I was going to do. The opportunity working for the family business I thought was good enough. I actually bypassed going to college. But I started looking for businesses for sale, and lo and behold, ended up finding an adult website for sale on a site called bizbuysell.com. And it was a collection of adult websites. Way back then, it was what we would call an AVS or age verification system.
Oh, wow. Can you say which one it was? Because I actually used a lot of those back in the day.
It never had an affiliate program, so it wasn't one of the big ones that you would have known. It was just a collection of pay sites, but I very much had a birth by fire. So what ended up happening, so an AVS was basically one username and password and access to lots and lots of websites. So the idea would be, this one was ageprotection.com.
Right.
Currently probably goes off into the ether now somewhere. I don't even know. I don't own the domain anymore, but someone would buy that and then get access to like 1470 really tiny websites with some galleries. And then it was 20 or 30 big ones that had lots of galleries and maybe even some videos. Right. So, and all of that, and then they would pay like $19.99 a month for a website membership. So at any rate, so I started down this journey. I quit my day job. I should have just borrowed money from a credit card. Instead, I took on a terrible business partner that had personal problems and a gambling problem. It was full of bad advice. You know, the guy was, I was just over 20 years old and he was in his 40s. But basically, he put up the money on our down payment to buy these porn sites. And then we just got totally defrauded by the seller. So what I bought was not a unique set of websites. No proper content. So as it turns out, like everything, all of the designs were stolen and duplicated and sold six times over across six different sets of domains. All of the content that I purchased was actually just scraped from Usenet.
Oh man.
So like none of it was properly licensed. So all the content was bad. So basically I bought this business, got defrauded, and I had to very quickly figure out what the heck I was going to do, because back then you couldn't just transfer ownership of a domain name. We had already sent, $25,000 or $35,000 to this guy. But back then you had to like go to get a notary signature and do with original signatures required. That's how you would transfer domain names between people. And he was playing games on that, making it difficult to accomplish. So at any rate, as soon as I was able to get that domain name transferred and I got the hosting transferred, I lawyered up, told him to go fuck himself. And was sort of off to the races with a very illegitimate business. And on top of all of that, the recurring credit card billing database was stuffed with bad information and billing bad data.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
So it was just like everything was wrong. So basically what I very quickly ended up doing, so I searched out, I didn't want the business in that form. And of course, I felt like an idiot because I didn't know how to do due diligence to see that I just got bamboozled, right? So, but once I discovered this, I'm a quick student. So I figured out, okay, I need to delete everything, build all new websites, and buy all licensed content. So the first library that I purchased was from a guy named Max Candy, who's actually still in the business.
I know Max well.
Yep, and back then it was 40,000, I think it was 40,000 images and some hundreds of videos. There wasn't as much video back in 99, but was off to the races. And I could keep telling the story, but basically started with pay sites, very quickly was renting a server, and then I was co-locating in a data center, and then I was starting to meet people after going to my first conference in May of 2000 in New Orleans. And so I ended up making some friends, and so I like rented some server space to other people because I had just one server in this co-location space, and I had space for like four more. And we think we'd all laugh. I was purchasing 10 megabit of bandwidth, and I had about 5 megabit extra. So I was like, oh, I can maybe sell some space and bandwidth and try to cover some of my hosting bill. So I tried a bunch of different things. I did recreate those sites. Ended up doing some content leasing. I ended up having what was eventually known as SynTalk. It was a phone sex affiliate program. I did very well with that. I ended up selling that. That was actually the first time I really made money online, was the sale of my affiliate program promoting phone sex numbers back to the bureau that I had contracted to do the fulfillment on all of the phone calls. And somewhere in that space, I had started MojoHost in 2002. And it was like 2003-04 was when I sold the phone business, and then everything was just all about MojoHost. So started way back then, and I think my experience as a webmaster, eventually, you know, as a pay site owner, eventually as an affiliate, has really helped me to be a better web host over all of these years, because I feel, you know, akin and like that, like I really understand the needs of affiliates and what the customer experience should be.
Yeah, and if you think back to, I've been asking everybody this question, I want to get your perspective on it. When you think back to your earliest days in the business and what the community was like, when you go to shows and you'd be around people, and describe that community. And I'm asking you this because then I'm going to ask you to like to think about how it's changed over the years and what it looks like now.
Oh, it's so hard to paint a picture. I was very young, right? So today I'm 45 years old. Back then I was approximately 23, 24 when I was present at my first conference in 2000. I guess it was 25, but boy, I was like a deer in headlights. It was a spectacle. It was like watching, like for me to walk into that, like I was a quiet, shy kid with no sense of style that was wearing probably a matching shirt and socks from the Gap. It was like walking into the ring at the WWF and into some amazing spectacle. I mean, the first conference that I went to in New Orleans, and then many years later, you know, eventually in Vegas, of course, I went to those shows. It was just a super spectacle. I mean, there were the ways that companies were spending money to promote their brand and the boost that they were building and the talent that they would hire to surround themselves with, you know, essentially promo models, or whether it's actual talent, people that were in, you know, pictures and video, was mind blowing. I mean, even by the end of that first year in business, I remember going to the Sands Expo. That might have been in January of 2001. I mean, there were $500,000 trade show booths there, custom built. You know, and an expo floor filled with the kinds of numbers you would only expect to see now today at AEE in Las Vegas with consumers. I mean, imagine a show floor that's 2 football fields big that has 4,000 to 6,000 people there, you know, predominantly all for B2B, not a consumer show, not right. Something that consumers were going to. So it was very lavish. You know, even back then, the concept of affiliate tracking, you know, how legitimate was it and could I trust it, was a little bit foreign to me. I remember after I had rebuilt my websites, I did not yet have my own affiliate program, but I was considering where else could I or should I send my traffic, and I didn't even trust the whole linking strategy or the whole sort of honesty factor of having a website that sent traffic elsewhere and would it be counted correctly. So I decided not to initially, I didn't promote any other affiliate programs. What I did was I went out and I got niche phone sex lines for every different fetish type of website that I had. So I started with 10 or 15 phone lines. And it was from that I was inspired to then go to my first conference. And my goal at that New Orleans show in 2000 was actually to find a bureau, because I thought to myself, I made money in very short course putting phone numbers on the internet. And I was inspired, of course, because in the old days, most of us were, you know, beating off and looking at magazines. So I figured there had to be something to it. But yeah, I thought, you know, gee, if I could go teach other webmasters how to promote numbers just like the, just the same way that I am, and I could make, you know, 25 cents or 50 cents for every minute that they sell. And, you know, I don't want to say a pyramid scheme, but, you know, in an affiliate scheme, you know, where you've got, you know, there's the cost of doing business. And then if I could make people affiliates and give them great vanity phone lines, that would be good. And of course, eventually I did reskin the program to use an affiliate, you know, affiliate tracking software. Those were the early days. Today, you know, with MojoHost, we actually have an affiliate program. And it's unique to the extent that, you know, you can certainly send traffic with your code and it will most definitely be tracked. But we are a very personable company. We're a very boutique business. So you can also just as easily take a qualified lead and just make an introduction to myself or my sales team directly. And, you know, we'll work hard to, of course, we'll track that, but we'll work hard to close the sale, keep it personable. And we pay out for the lifetime of the account that's sent to us.
So out of curiosity, you mentioned the phone sex numbers and vanity numbers. In your early days at IA 2000 or Internext Expo, did you ever run across an individual named Christopher Rue who was in the phone sex number business? He would find numbers for people.
So I don't know that guy. Was he one of the owners of NTS or American Telnet?
Gosh, I don't remember his company name. I think he was more of an independent operator who should go to shows and then find phone numbers for people. This is actually, I bring him up because he was actually one of, I was like you, a kid when I walked in, compared to now, I was in my early 20s and I walked into my first show and he was one of the first individuals I sort of became a friend with. And it brings back memories thinking,
yeah, a lot of people... I didn't know him. I was very lucky. So the gentleman that I met, his name was Tom DeCampo, and he owned a company out of Boston called CTG. And he and his business partner were just fabulous people, very, very honest. They worked hard, and they were onto something really early, which I would say is akin today to how successful CAM models manage their clients and their clientele. Like they had, of course, their stable of phone talent, and then each, with providing live entertainment over the phone gives a few more options on, I guess, the types of personalities that one person could do. But basically, each person that worked for that phone bureau would manage to five or six personalities, and they would have notes on all of the callers. So they would know, you know, that when Frank called before he spoke to, you know, Dolly, and, you know, they would actually take like crib notes. So they would make notes on, what his likes, dislikes, or notes about, you know, sometimes, of course, people just want to talk about their life and their personal life. So they would take notes about that so that way they could provide a better experience and get that recurring business. Because really, as we all know, the type of entertainment that we're really trying to sell online is the stickier kind that isn't really just a one-off interaction. It's a more personable experience that brings customers back, you know, and retains clients over the long term. So
when you think of that industry, that early industry, and what it was, and you're talking about show floors with thousands of people like walk around B2B only in Las Vegas, and you think of where we're at now, so there was this transition. What do you think happened to that world? Like, what caused the changes over time? How do we get from there to here? How do you see it now versus then? And what were the primary driving forces that caused that shift in the industry over time?
Love that question. I think I can actually fully answer it. So I would make two distinctions. The first of which is that more is not always better. So I would say that there is an argument to be made that despite the fact that there were 4,000 to 6,000 people at a conference, and that was very exciting and presumably full of opportunity, that wasn't 4,000 to 6,000 people of quality interactions. Right. So it was a lot of people, it was a lot of spectacle. But what I also observed back in those early days was people had an entourage. Right. So I was nobody from nowhere. So, of course, it was just me trying to grow my business. I was a one man show. And, you know, I might go to, back then it was, you know, Bradshaw's booth or a Silver Cash booth. And there might be 5, 10, 15 people. You know, it could be that there's an owner, a few key employees, and, you know, 5 or 10 models. So, you know, one of the differences, I think, when you look at any industry as it matures, there's always the sort of that gold the, I don't want to say gold rush phase, but very early on, there was a lot of people in the right place at the right time that played their cards right, that had very big sites very fast and were making so much fucking money, they literally didn't know what to do with it or how to, you know, they were all just cowboys. None of these people were necessarily, you know, degreed business people with a mature approach. And I would say the difference between comparing the landscape in 2000 to 2005 or six versus the 15 years that followed that would be that, just like any other industry, like, you know, perhaps you could even compare it to the car industry where, you know, in the early 1900s, there was over 100 or 150 different manufacturers. Everything grows up, everything matures, and eventually people have to work hard and be smart to earn that living and to keep earning it. And they also have to, you know, not make the mistakes that, Connor, I know you and I have seen so many business owners that made crazy cash, lots of money, and then took their eyes off the prize, didn't reinvent themselves, and eventually they and or their product became irrelevant, or their work ethic went from being very good to very not good. And, you know, that's enough to take somebody out of the game. So, yeah,
and to back that up, I'll just add to that. You're talking about those early days. The IA 2000 show, which became InterDex Expo, was kind of the evolution of what started off as a phone sex show, right? So people who are in the audio text business and phone sex.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah. So my first show was 1997, and I'll never forget it. It was in Orlando, which is funny because we were right next to Disney World with our adult show. And there was, like, you know, maybe half or a third of the show floor was people who were into the phone sex world, and they had been making bank, right, for years, right. Like lots of money. All of a sudden, there was this internet coming along that was disrupting their business model, and they were not happy about it.
They were very reticent to change. They didn't want to do it, and most of them became dinosaurs.
That's exactly right. They sat in the corners staring at us, just glaring at us. I remember the hostility.
And it's amazing. You could even draw the same analogy to those that were doing DVD distribution with their transition to online. I mean, look at all of the amazing brands that, for at least some number of years, every single consumer known brand producer completely failed on their transition to going online. Playboy failed by all measures in those early days. You know, Playboy failed, Vivid failed, Hustler failed. They all failed in transitioning to online. It was the people that were figuring it out were the people that were producing for internet distribution that weren't married to distributing in brick and, you know, through brick and mortar.
Yeah, and there was a couple of companies, two that stand out, you know, back in the day who were phone sex companies that transitioned over to the internet quite successfully. Cyber Erotica, of course, being one of them. They started off as phone sex, and the other was RJB Telecom, who ran a program called Max Cash.
Max Cash,
they both came from the phone sex world. So that was an early lesson for me, and I think it backs up what you're saying, which is I saw these guys and I went, wow, there were a lot of these guys who just sat there bitter and angry that their industry had changed. And I get it. It sucks. You got something that's working and it changes. But there were a few people who said, you know, we're going to this. We're rolling with this. And Max at Cyber Erotica, I used to joke that they probably made more money than a small country. I don't know what they actually made. I mean, do you have any guess? Like, if you thought, like, just how much do you think we're pulling in?
I don't know. Like, I wasn't actually any version of cool, popular or successfully social until probably somewhere between 2008 and 2012.
Right.
So way back, I mean, can you imagine, you know, boy, how things changed. But, you know, 20 years ago, I literally never did get that VIP invite to go to that, you know, that special party in someone's suite or even just to get into some of the parties that were admittance restricted. But back to your original question. So there was a second part I wanted to answer. We were talking about what was the difference between the early days versus today when, you know, in other words, a stadium full of people versus a smaller group of, you know, 500 to 1,000 entrepreneurs. And the other difference, I believe, the real paradigm shift that affected affiliate marketing, I believe that happened between 2008 and 2010. And what was happening at that time was, I guess some people saw it coming or saw it for what it was when it happened, and they adjusted, and others didn't. But essentially, it was the advent, the proliferation of tube sites. So, you know, originally, when, you know, back in the old days, when you would go to a conference, everybody was trying to talk to the guys that own the sites that sold stuff, and they wanted to be their affiliate. That group of 5,000 people was 4,850 affiliates. Well, maybe not, right? Because there was lots of models, but it was almost all affiliates, and it was very few site owners and people that were publishing and distributing. And now, as we all know, it is the exact opposite. In fact, it's almost comedic where, like, if someone's an affiliate, it's almost like, well, they're like, oh my God, we found an affiliate. Somebody go grab them, right? So what happened was, there was just a prolific amount of affiliates promoting all of these different pay site programs and whether they were RevShare or paper sign up or, and then, you know, sort of one by one, people either moved out of the adult space into promoting other affiliate areas online, or just kind of went the way of the dodo bird. But it was a combination at the same time. It was paid search and it was tube sites, right? Because where you could rank in search engines before, because they weren't as sophisticated at monetizing on the traffic as they are now and have been for the last decade, you know, to get that premium placement. Originally you could build a website and generate organic traffic and do it pretty quickly. Like I remember in the early zeros, building websites and getting organic search engine traffic within days to a week from, you know, like AltaVista and, you know, DMOZ and all these other places that, you know, like the open source directory or the open directory project or whatever it was called.
That's right. I hadn't thought of that one in a long time.
You ended up with all these stupid porn sites that had dumb names like !!, Abby's, blah, 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 whatever. So that, because they were doing an alphanumeric sort on all of the listings. So it was, you know, it was just exactly like that. But what happened with the tube sites is that as most of us understand that our site owners or have been site owners, the laws for copyright and, you know, protecting trademarks and copyrights on content are not effective at protecting rights owners. So what basically happened is all of the tube sites now, which are by and large running on a legitimate business model now of they receive producer created content. Originally, they just stole everybody's stuff and they published it all. Then they threw their own watermarks on them, and then they put links and advertisements around all that content that they published, which promoted other things where they had an affiliate code or a ref code, or they just simply sold the ad space. So everything was stolen, and there was no teeth to any of that. So it was essentially a pillaging of everybody's hard work that was creating and publishing and doing it the old-fashioned way. And some people refused to change, and, you know, so... But that along with, I think, the change of free search to paid search and just the sophistication and the number of people competing for traffic really changed how many affiliates were in the marketplace. And then I think that gave birth more to traffic networks and then the people that were publishers doing business more directly with traffic aggregators and super affiliate, what we would call super affiliates. That's my two cents on that.
Yeah, so you talked about there being so few affiliates now versus then. I always think of like Ghostbusters, you know, where like we got one, they hit the alarm when there's an affiliate, like, you know. Do you think, okay, the affiliates left for a reason, right? That we had, you mentioned the tube site phenomenon happening, and the industry had not really adapted to this yet. Now a lot of them have, whether it's, you know, focusing on live interaction through cams or if it's focusing on content that's at a premium level enough to where somebody will pay for it, or niched out enough where somebody will pay for it. There's been years of adaption that's gone on. Do you think that those affiliates who all left, if some of them were to come back now, obviously the market is eager for them, right? These companies are making money, who have affiliate programs. So their products are proven that they can make money with them. Seems reasonable that affiliate can make money. Is that just pie in the sky? Am I being too optimistic? Do you think an affiliate can make money with these companies now, or maybe even with less competition than before? Or is it just that ship has sailed?
I don't think that the ship is completely sailed. I think that the opportunity exists because so many have left the marketplace, but nothing that's worthwhile is ever easy. I think that the opportunity is for someone that's going to have a little bit of grit, and they're going to build a more unique website to create that promotion. They're going to spend the time and they're going to write the copy. They're going to try to, you know, try to find a way to draw on users to get bookmark what I would call bookmark traffic or regular visitors. You know, so you know, one thing that hasn't changed, you know, the review sites that were successful 5, 10, and 15 years ago, as far as I know, all those guys still are friends. They're all still millionaires, and most of them are, you know, they're all still in business. And they survived because they kept themselves relevant by having an honest website that provided some good information, had a different take on how to drive quality traffic to different places. And if they can do that and be successful in 2021, I don't see why that doesn't open up the opportunity for somebody else to create a similar type site. You know, I don't think that in today's day and age, the money is ever going to pour in because nothing's that easy. But I think there's plenty of opportunity, and there's lots of great tools to do it that make it easier than it's ever been, and I think less expensive of an investment to get started. You know, one example I would give, even on the TubeSite side of things, like we've got, like at MojoHost, we created a promotion with the industry's leading TubeSite software, CMS software, which is MechBunny, and someone for $49 a month can get a package that gives them a whole content management system that they can publish across multiple domains, all on a really high spec VPS that also includes 2 terabytes of cloud storage for content or whatever. There's a couple different plans that are out there, but includes like cloud storage for content, includes like an integrated use of our content delivery network. So someone can actually go and build a website and not have to invest, you know, necessarily, you know, thousands of dollars to get started, to get a website that's up off the ground and is able to compete in a performance manner against, you know, other mature websites that have big hosting budgets. So, you know, it is possible, you know, whether it's that or the use of even like free, you know, WordPress is the most commonly installed software out there. Use with caution because you'll get hacked if you don't do it right and don't pick the right plugins. I think it's always good to pick a friendly host that can give you good support and give you some guidance along the way. But I think that there is opportunity because today, you know, in the old days, there used to be a whole different collection of websites out there. Like there were, you know, now if you wanted to find a list of what are all of the premium pay sites that are selling subscriptions, like I feel like, Connor, like we'd have to actually do some work to find that list. Like where can we go find that list? In the old days, there used to be like resource directories. When's the last time someone made a resource directory? Maybe make it and target it toward, you know, consumers to go find, you know, who are all of the sites that are processing credit cards independently or perhaps, you know, over SegPay or CCBill or Epoch. There's a lot of different ways to skin that cat. And I think a lot of the opportunity today is finding ways to work with what I think is this next paradigm shift that we're all witnessing, which is sort of power back to the producers. You know, so if you would ask somebody in 2010, what's king, content or traffic, they'd have said traffic. What we see today with the proliferation of live cams, many vids, OnlyFans, and all of these other platforms that are enabling content producers to be their own star and to publish out to multiple different places, I think that actually presents a super unique opportunity to someone that wants to approach it like a smart affiliate. They could even aggregate. They could go and look at all of these different self-publishing platforms and find that way to be the affiliate and then put together their own directories by even perhaps niche or performer type. And put that into their own different review sites that can then drive traffic to all of these different places and join in the revenue and give reviews that while they're at it.
I also, before we get this point gets lost, you mentioned MechBunny a little while ago, which would allow, you know, effectively somebody to run their own tube site, right? If they wanted to do that. If you're an affiliate and you're thinking about that, hey, you know, putting up my own tube site and getting rolling with that. You mentioned the software fees. How does the bandwidth work on something like that? Like, how fast does it get expensive for them if they get successful, or is it pretty manageable? If you had, you know, if all of a sudden you were running a tube site with tens of thousands of people showing up, what's going to happen to your hosting bill? Is it going to get pretty dramatically high at that point? And I asked ask us in the sense of somebody who's thinking about maybe getting into that, planning ahead for how they'd have to monetize it in order to cover the expenses of running the site?
Of course. That's a great question. So there are a couple of different ways to deploy MechBunny. What I tried to accomplish with Conrad when we developed those plans were I wanted to create a smart turnkey, nearly infinitely scalable way that someone could start a tube site, be really, really small on a super efficient budget, and then grow it without pain points. And we were able to accomplish that by incorporating two new technologies into MechBunny that were not previously there. One was a turnkey integration with CDN, or Content Delivery Network. That's like basically the smart way that your content can be cached all over the world, and you could have something go viral, and all of that load of people wanting to look at your pictures and videos is going to be borne not by the server you're specifically renting from Mojo, but from the Content Delivery Network that has servers all over the world. So it gets to leverage all that other stuff, and you can do it really cheap. So what I did with that is I used our wholesale buying power. We have really two different CDNs that we sell at two different CDN products that we sell at Mojo Host. One is what I would consider to be the premium CDN tier. That's most applicable for someone whose content is behind a paywall. So your premium pay site, your Quip store, the kind of website where somebody's paying to view individual clips or paying a monthly membership fee, that surfer needs to have the absolute most stellar experience that is possible to be delivered. Versus a site where you're giving everything away, and in very, very large numbers, you're trying to convert like 1 in 10 or 20,000 visitors into actually doing something somewhere to generate some pennies or revenue or, you know, an affiliate sale, right? That just needs to be like good CDN, good enough to get the job done, to be able to handle the load, and to be able to do it cost effectively, because that's very much about handling cost. So what we've done with the MechBunny plans is we've essentially bundled in our economy CDN at a low everyday price of 0.003 cents per gigabyte of transfer. So like 0.3 of a penny per GB of transfer. If you start searching for CDNs, you'll find prices like Amazon prices their CDN at like 7 cents. So like literally it's the difference between 0.3 of a penny and then, you know, 7 cents. So we're significantly cheaper than a lot of the retail solutions that are out there. You know, a lot of other CDNs sell for 1, 2, 3, 4 cents, you know, per gigabyte of transfer. This we're offering at 0.3 of a penny. For someone that grows into huge volume, you know, we try to work with our clients so that way, you know, in volume and scale, you know, if someone's doing petabytes of transfer per month, that price can get more aggressive. So, but I would say you definitely get a gauge on that early on. So that bill that might start as $49 a month, it's not going to increment and be like, you're not going to get a bill for like $10,000 overnight. It's just simply not going to happen. And if it did, you know, the good news is you're in good hands at Mojo Host. That's where you pick up the phone, you call me and you say, Brad, fuck, we screwed up. Like, this is great. We got all this traffic, but I didn't make any money. What can you do to help me? Because I would rather have creative marketers on our network that feel like they're empowered to experiment with their marketing, and we can both succeed and fail together. So, you know, yes, of course we have automated billing. So, you know, if you push 120,000 gigabytes of bandwidth, you're going to get a bill for that. But if what you were really having is a moment in time where you experimented and it didn't work out, then that's an instance where you call Natalie or you call Brad and we talk about it. And then I write off as much as I can. But I have not seen in the last many years any instance of anyone getting that crazy kind of hosting bill that wasn't tying back to their business practices. Because the first thing that we'll do is we'll sit down and we'll do an analysis for you. So it's not like, you know, you can go out, there's always a cheaper web host, but they won't do all the things for you that we'll do. Like, we'll work real hard so that you spend less money. We'll go analyze your website. The first thing we do when someone gets a big bill and they're like, I don't understand what happened. I didn't make any more money this month, but my hosting bill grew. We got to look at where was the traffic? What was it hitting? Was anything being hot linked? Is anyone stealing your content, your traffic? Is there anything we can lock down more? You know, sometimes it's mistakes that people don't realize that they made that are actually their fault. Like, here's an example. There was a huge tube operator that we hosted, and they goofed up. Like, all the thumbnails that they were showing on the front page ended up that those thumbnails were 5 megabyte files, right? Instead of, you know, being, you know, so many K in size. But we're reasonable. We work hard, and we always want to get to the root of the problem. We want to be super efficient. We're in it for the long run. And Mojo Hosting is 20 years of service. I've helped people grow into being multimillionaires. I follow their business all the way up. And for some of them, I've also followed it all the way down. So we're not just one of those companies that wants to take your money when we're growing. We're fully supportive, understanding that everyone's business has its own life cycle, and we need to manage to that and be good to you regardless of where you're at in the life of your business, whether your business is growing or whether, you know, you're being humbled and things are changing. We're there to work hard with, right alongside with you.
Yeah, and I've argued for quite passionately that I think how important I think it is for people to work with other people in the industry, especially like I make the point with you all the time. You know, I've told you this before in private as well. You know, I'm just saying what I think is true. If you're in this business, you're running assets. Mainstream doesn't really care about you, and quite honestly, you could find yourself getting the parlay treatment very quick, like with the wrong host, right? Like, so to speak. I said parlay, I guess parlor is how it's pronounced. I have to use the French word, but, talk about relationship building in this industry. How important is it for people to build relationships, or does it not matter anymore? Can they just go it alone?
I think relationships are tremendously important, but I think if anyone did a study of my business experience the last 20 years, you would say, Brad, you're a great relationship builder and you're a horrible mass marketer. So like we've built a brand that's recognizable, and we have a familiarity and a bond with, you know, thousands of entrepreneurs and people that work in and around the space over the last 20 years. You know, we've met probably tens of thousands of people at all the trade shows that we've been to. But, you know, the one area where I myself as an owner, where I've underperformed as a hosting company owner, is I never spent time, energy, or effort to build out our own affiliate program. That's a more recent endeavor that Natalie's taken on as, you know, sort of our newly appointed, you know, business development, sales and marketing, as she loves to call, you know, BDSM, here at Mojo Host. But most hosting companies are built on like Google AdWords. They're built on reaching an unknown audience through a paid advertisement on some website and buying that lead and then making that sale to somebody that maybe never even talks to somebody at the host that's buying. And I guess I did it the hard way. And I kick myself all of the time. We have a tremendously successful business. It's probably quite a bit larger than most people would guess in terms of our annual revenue. But we've worked really hard on that. And I guess, you know, one of the differences for us, I find that when you build the relationship, you've got just more amazing client retention and better communication. And I find that while it was much slower for me to build over all of the years, as I look at Mojo Host now and I look at the competitors that are left, I fucking crushed all of them, every single one of them. They are all either out of business or in business now, we're maybe able to pivot to mainstream. Every single one of them essentially failed because they weren't in it. They weren't in it for the long haul. Like, I remember, or maybe they were, but they got too full of themselves. Like, I remember when I started, there were two companies that I sort of idolized, and I said, someday I want my business to be like that business. And won't name names, but they had very large hosting companies, and I had a very small hosting company with myself and, you know, one or two employees when I first started. But, you know, it was building the relationships and our mantra that, you know, the hashtag that's good mojo, always doing the right thing. You know, we didn't coin or trademark that until just a few years ago, the that's good mojo trademark. But it's actually just been always my core value. Like, I've always done the right thing, and I've always done it, even though it's made me, you know, not the wealthy, most wealthy and secure guy that I wish I was at this age of 45, but I've always done the right thing, and it's got good long tail value. Like, man, last year we grew our business and it was really wonderful. I wouldn't credit it. It was a tough year. I didn't see that we were growing it throughout the year. I just knew we were working really hard all year long. And the growth that we had wasn't actually due to COVID like one would suspect, because we're a web host and there was some more bandwidth being pushed. That's not really a metric that matters that much anymore. Bandwidth is cheap. So any increase in our sales due to more bandwidth being used because of people being at home is actually minimal. But I grew the business 20%, and I actually credit that to relationship values, because I think what happened, I always thought I needed to keep traveling and going to trade shows to keep making sales. But what really happens is, after being so persistent for so long and so good to our clients, it's the truth of it is that our existing customers are our best salespeople. They're the ones that tell people to come use MojoHost. That's how people find me. Maybe not so much in a Google search, but when they're talking to people on different affiliate and webmaster boards, it's people doing experience sharing that are more passionate about their hosting provider, because they're remembering that time when we went above and beyond to do something for them. Or they're remembering, I spend a lot of time at conferences trying to mentor and introduce new people, because I think it's fun and it feels good to teach people something. Because in the beginning, I had some people that did that with me, and I was real thankful. And then now that I've got the opportunity to give a little bit more back, I try to slow down and do that, because I remember just how important it is to stay in touch with my roots. I remember all the guys that I put out of business were too fucking cool to hang out with me.
I know that. I know that feeling.
And that might sound like a gross exaggeration, but
it is not. I was there, man. I know.
It's so true. They had their VIP poker rooms and tables and private jets and all those different things that they did. And, my secret to success, honestly, was just very humbly starting at the bar, putting drinks on credit cards and buying them for other people and making conversation, even when I was, to 5 and 6 digits in credit card debt those early years, trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But
thanks for all those drinks, by the way. I was one of the guys at the bar. Definitely remember that. And, and you talk about that word of mouth that's working for you. And that, of course, came from all that trust you've built up over the years in people. We know you, we trust you. Somebody who's new, take the perspective of somebody who's brand new, either they're coming in as an affiliate or they're a new business owner, and they got two problems. Problem number one is, how do they get people to trust them? Problem number two is, who do they trust, right, as they look around, because they don't know anybody. What do you think about that? What's the role of trust? How do you get it? How do you know who to trust?
Those are great questions. It's very hard to know who to trust. And I would almost suggest that appearances are not where you start with making that valuation. What everyone really needs to do is they need to start with the first person. Who's the first person that they can vet, that they can talk to, where they really can know, or on good information, really trust that person is honest, and then start to work their way out almost like a spider web. Like, if someone was to come to you, Connor, or me, or to Jay, or, to any one of these other leaders, Corey Silverstein, or you name it. There's a lot of people that have been around a long time and worked really hard and didn't have anything easy given to them. And the core group of us are woefully honest, even when it doesn't benefit us. We've had a lot of hard lessons. I don't know. I've always approached everything with a great sense of humility, right? So I'm always suspect when I see like a really refined and polished sales pitch, especially when it's verbal, or glossy or on a website. Like, I can actually assure you, there are probably 5 or 10,000 hosting websites that have deeper, richer content and better pictures and a more refined sales pitch than you'd find on MojoHost.com or MojoHost.eu. In fact, I just realized this morning my network's sales pitch on my MojoHost.eu website is like 5 years old and completely inaccurate. But you got to have conversations, because it's easy to put up a website and make lots of claims. But as we all know especially from the news the last 12 months, you can't believe everything you read online. It's not all true. There is fake news out there. I tend to be very resistant to doing business with people that are braggarts. It's wonderful that I have nothing against people that are successful. I think that's terrific. But I tend to respond better to people that our teachers that are willing to have a conversation, that aren't too cool to talk about it. I mean, I think one of the things that affiliates miss the opportunity to do that they should do more often is they think that they're stuck only on an instant messenger or in an email. What you should do as an affiliate, once you've targeted some products that you'd like to, products or websites that you'd like to promote, see if you can get on a phone call, talk to these companies. Because the funny thing is, you know, what do we all do day in and day out with our regular relationships? We text, we send emails. So the truth of it is, most of us spend most of the day not on the phone. Some people almost never talk on the phone anymore. But you can get so much information. Like I think of, like for example, Connor, you know, if you want traffic, you want to buy traffic to, you know, for your website or for a niche. Like imagine the value of talking to, you know, Jimmy or Julie over at Juicy Ads, to just be able to get them on the phone and pick their brain. You know, why people are so afraid to get into like real conversation and ask deeper questions and question everything. That's one thing I always did. So I always ask a ton of dumb questions. But how do you start building a reputation? You know, how do you start doing that yourself by doing acts of kindness for others is what I discovered. So in the beginning, when I was still learning and I was asking lots of people questions, I was always thankful for that. And then as I started to build a repertoire or a Rolodex of people that I was able to engage in conversation, the next thing that I would do, instead of when meeting people, trying to sell them hosting, I took a very unusual approach. I would ask them, what was it they were trying to accomplish? Who were they trying to find? And the first thing that I would do was pay it forward. I would go through my Rolodex after learning what it was they were trying to do and who they wanted to talk to. And I would personally connect them with the people that I had already met that could help them on their journey to do what they wanted to do. And my goal was always to soft sell hosting that, like, hey, if you eventually need some hosting, I hope you think of me and come back to MojoHost.
Absolutely.
And that's very different. You know, most Connor, you and Jay and I and everybody, all of us, especially as veterans, laugh because it seems like every time somebody at a traffic network hires a new salesperson, 9 times out of 10, you know, some of those positions are maybe with some of the bigger networks are better at hiring. Some networks are better at hiring than others, but I can't tell you how many conversations I've started where some new hire, you know, could be here in North America, could be at a conference in Europe. It's like, you know, new traffic rep, typically a young demographic, like, hey, do you have any traffic? And when you say no, like they're fucking on to the next conversation. And all I could think to myself is, man, you're such a fucking moron. Like if you would have sat and had a conversation with me, share a little bit about yourself, ask a little bit about my business, you're like one person away from everybody here at this whole conference. Like most of the time I kind of, you know, Connor, we've been doing this so long, we kind of have met everybody. Like, it's, yeah, it's about relationship building. Like that person, if you're not willing to engage in like having a real conversation, I don't think you're going to find meaningful traffic anyways. Like what you really want is you want to find a way to bond with somebody over something, yeah. Anything, whether it's your cat, your dog, your kid, your skateboard hobby, your, you know, your singing karaoke or just having drinks at the bar, or even, you know, those helpful moments. I do look forward to things being back in person, but when you're able to help somebody with their business, usually that's a pretty memorable event. And then they will think of you, and not everybody does, but that will have business find its way back to you. If you're interesting and memorable, and you don't have to be super interesting, but you know, being honest and hardworking goes an awful long way, because believe it or not, that usually separates the 90% from the 10%.
Yeah, I can back up everything you said there. I'm where I'm at in terms of, owner, why not? And my position in the industry, 100% from those relationships and those conversations and the people I met and bonded with at early stages of the industry. And then the other side is had the same experience where there were individuals who were, just as you said, too cool for school and had their little cliques, and they didn't really go out, and you try to have a conversation with them and they're just kind of like looking for sort of getting out of the room. Most of those people are gone now. Their businesses models crashed. There are a few of them left, and It's funny, to this day, you know, although I get very different treatment from them now, it's always in my mind about that initial impression that was made from some of these people, where I'm like, yeah, if this was before, I know exactly how you'd be treating me right now. And so that goes through my head. I completely agree with you.
We have a lot of conversations. There were some last week on a webmaster meetup. We did a Zoom together, and there was a lot of, do you remember when? And I just kind of kept quiet, and all I could think to myself was, I wasn't cool enough to hang out with you guys.
That's right.
But relationships, very, very important.
With all those changes over the years, I did want to ask you, because I don't know what you can or can't give an insights in this regard or how much you're even privy to, but since you are, the hosting company, really, and you have so many important clients, you got to be privy to some understandings on the trends, like in terms of, and that might just be from, you know, from traffic trends or just the type of customers that you know that are growing, that are their business models are on an upward trend. What are you seeing as you look at, like, ahead? What are you seeing that, like, hey, you know, is live cam still growing? Is that kind of hitting its peak, or are you seeing other growth areas that you're like, you know what, this isn't VR starting to trend up, or even if it's not very high now but trending up? What are you seeing in traffic in trends?
So absolutely cams. And it's been amazing to watch it the last couple of years, but we've had a ton of growth with, the cam companies that we do host. I've continued to observe them growing. And, you know, I think everybody's traffic grew in 2020, with stay at home stuff, but certainly live cams, the clip stores and, you know, the content creator platforms, like I Want Clips, like ManyVids, you know, I think, you know, those are tremendous platforms. That's the wave of the future. There's for the brands that we know, and we can say out loud now, I can tell you there are so many more people that are similarly innovating and getting ready to launch new sites. You know, I don't think that any one of us could claim that that race is over and the winner's been determined. I don't think that that's the case at all. Some of these platforms, I mean, in the scheme of things, they're only a few years old. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity with live webcams. I see a lot of innovation in that space. I think that the clip stores and platforms that enable models and couples to produce their own unique content and distribute, and distribute not exclusively, but you know, they can distribute on multiple different platforms. I think that that's certainly seeing the most growth. The winners have not been determined yet, I don't think, in the cam space or the clip and store space. You know, there's obviously a lot of business being done in cams, but I think that there is still opportunity for growth and innovation there. And, you know, it's such a large market, so many billions of dollars trading hands. I think that depending on what someone's goals are and what they set their sights on, I think it's possible to innovate and still launch new products and succeed in that space. I know that there are dozens of clip sites that are in development and in early stages of being launched that will continue to further innovate. I see we have a sort of a constant influx of customers that are creating new tube sites, you know, some more unique than others, but I still see growth and I still see success with that. But, you know, all of these ventures take distinct effort and, you know, trial and error, and nothing is easy, right? So easy ended a long time ago. So I think that there's space to be an affiliate and generate quality, you know, traffic and send it to different platforms. I think that there's space even now for someone to create pay sites. I mean, boy, there used to be so many more pay site programs out there that have gone, you know, the way that just don't exist anymore. And one thing that I think is true, it wasn't just that it wasn't entirely that the pay sites couldn't originally compete with the tube sites that garnered the traffic. It was the unwillingness to change their business model and promote themselves differently and give richer promo content. I mean, it's almost laughable now to look back in, you know, compare a premium website in 2021 that sells picture and video content against one that existed in 2005. The idea that we used to make sales before even showing a video clip is, you know, amazing, right? So I remember being on panels in the early, in the mid-2000s where pay site owners were arguing that tube sites giving away 5 and 10 second video clips was too much free content. Like, that was actually a conversation that people had. I mean, it seems crazy to compare that to today. But the,
remember those.
The huge successes that we see today, I mean, there are some beautiful websites out there, like, you know, sexart.com and, you know, the sites by, you know, like Hegger is another one that produces just absolutely beautiful scenes. I think quality really resonates with surfers, and there's still opportunity for people that want to be on the production side, producing new and original content, as well as on the affiliate side and on the platform side. Of course, on the platform side, you're going to need every bit of research, guidance, trust, and relationships that you can to make sure that you don't lose all of your money and all the money you borrowed from your friends and family to go build that website. So that's why I recommend, if you really think that you've got a great business idea or something that you want to develop that is going to require something more than an investment that you could afford to lose, that's when you need to start gathering your circle of trust and you go talk to a Connor or a Jay or myself or Corey Silverstein or some of these other people, and we can help you possibly eliminate you know, some good ideas from bad ideas and really dial in on sort of shortening your path, shortening that learning curve, because if you haven't done it, then you don't know. So really, your best bet is to have a dose of humility and ask for some guidance, but do it with a group of people that you can trust and that have a track record that shows they are knowledgeable, they do have experience, and they are guiding you in ways that are not just for their own benefit.
But Brad, I saved the tough question for the end here, and so I'm going to throw this one at you. Get your reaction to this current events. Those who aren't really paying much attention to what's going on with the model community, the sex worker community on Twitter and other platforms, there's a bit of a freak out right now, and for pretty good reason. A lot of sex workers are finding that their Twitter accounts are suddenly being suspended, and they're not always sure like why that's happening. We've seen a couple companies in the industry that are very well known, Clips for Sale and Model Centro, suddenly saw their Twitter account suspended. Again, I don't think anybody has a clear idea why this has happened. On the Facebook side, there's a writer who writes for Why Not Cam occasionally, and a sex worker advocate who posted an image of a pink umbrella with under it was a drawing, and underneath were the words "sex worker rights" or "human rights." That's it. It was just a drawing with those words on it in Facebook, and she got put in Facebook jail, you know, with the violation of community standards message, right, where you're kind of locked up for a few days. I wonder if you think, is all this related to Section 230? Do you think what we're seeing from the social media networks is an understanding from them that there's going to be changes to Section 230 coming down the line and they're starting to adapt accordingly in advance? Or do you think there's something else going on? How worried should we be about Section 230 changes?
Oh boy, tough question, right? That is a tough one for the last question. Obviously, the best person to answer that question is probably our attorney, Corey Silverstein at myadultattorney.com. But there are certainly changes, and this is something that we've talked about a long time. Obviously, being deplatformed from being removed from a platform, or even as we saw with Parler, from a web host like Amazon, I think that's what's really got this fresh in everybody's mind, you know, to see a whole platform of communication even being asked to be removed from a hosting service provider makes you wonder, you know, what inside of a terms of service could get anybody caught up at one of those really big providers. But the short answer is I don't know, Connor. I'm concerned that there doesn't seem to be an immediately viable alternate solution, because the truth of it is where the producers, publishers, you know, the B2B, you know, all of us, we could all quickly find out about a new relevant platform that would support the kinds of things that we want to talk about and promote, or maybe even put one online. But there's no traction unless you can get surfers to go there too, right? So I think the biggest concern that we all have is if Twitter ends up, you know, banning, removing adult material, then what ramifications will that have on traffic sources? How will that affect, you know, business operators? I can't speak to, you know, sex workers in the physical sense, because as you and I know, sex work is not legal in the United States unless you're, you know, let me define type of sex work.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Obviously, escorting is not legal anywhere except for, I think, is it just some places in Nevada?
Nevada, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so that is and has always been, you know, a prohibited use of any hosting service to do such promotion, or any platform for that matter, can't really legally be used for that. And never was allowed. That was always not allowed based on acceptable use policies that you would find published on any web hosting service provider or any platform provider. But as for the rest of it, I think, you know, the only advice that I would give is perhaps more relative to what I know, and that's your web hosting. It's that if you are operating within the confines of the law, there will be no safer place to host your business. If you are doing cams or clips or videos or adult entertainment, than that of MojoHost. We've got the most informed legal counsel between Corey Silverstein and Larry Walters. And we're not such a big business that we don't care about our clients. We are completely dialed in to everything in the industry. And, you know, we even participate. I'm on two different boards. I'm on the board of Pineapple Support, which is a wonderful charity supporting mental health services for sex workers in the adult entertainment industry. And then also the ASACP, which helps to identify and prevent child exploitation on the internet. So we're clearly committed to the space. And I think to the best that we can, we should all be choosing to do business with other providers and companies that are similarly committed and that have the same set of values. And I think that we need to continue having conversations about platform use and you know, potentially standing up something that would serve our industry better, that is maybe not controlled by the stock market and publicly traded and judged in the court of public opinion, but can be judged more on the merits of the laws of the United States in which we live.
Brad, I want to thank you for taking this time today. I know you're a busy guy and your insight's really valuable. Always enjoy talking with you. I regret that we haven't had a chance to meet in person recently with everything that's going on in the world. And I just want to say I look forward to the next time we can meet in person and you can pay for drinks for a crowd of like 100 people, myself included.
I can't wait to get luscious with you and buy drinks for everybody. I'm really looking forward to better, healthier times and getting back in person with everybody, even if it ends up being, you know, more distance. That's, you know, some of these first events that hopefully kick off later this year in 2021. Thank you again for the opportunity, Connor. And of course, you know, just to wind out, I think you guys do a wonderful job spreading great news and information and supporting the industry. You guys are really key to the success, the continued success of everything I see going on in our landscape.
Thank you so much for saying that. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Brad, very much.
Take care.